State your name for the record, please.
My name is Prem Sichanukrit.
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 Yep.
Pretty close.
Live from Dabba Studio in Boston, Massachusetts.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody. This is the Giant Robot Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is October 1st. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I am here with Prem Sichanukrit. How you doing, Prem?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Awesome. So, Prem, you are a developer here at ThoughtBot, is that right?
Yep.
Cool. How long have you been here?
9 months. Yeah, my anniversary is going to be like... in October 1st.
Awesome. Your anniversary is when this comes out?
Yeah, so
beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And by it comes out, I mean it's definitely the first today, and we didn't record this early at all.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Our cover's blown. All right, so we're not broadcasting exactly live. There's a slight delay between ThoughtBot and the world.
Yeah.
But you're getting it pretty close to real. So we wanted to talk today about Rails version 1?
No, version 4.
Version 4. Version 4 is in the works. It's almost released, right? We're getting pretty close?
Yeah, we are so close. There are like some blockers in there that blocking the release, obviously.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to happen pretty soon, it looks like.
Yeah, I think they're aiming before Christmas. I hope it's Christmas for this year, though.
Okay. Unless mm-hmm. it's a Christmas present?
Yep.
Didn't Rails 3 come out like right before Christmas or something?
Yeah, I think so. And for Rails 3, they were actually like aiming for release during the RailsConf.
Mm.
But then, yeah, it delay so bad.
Sure, that happens. So let's talk about some of the features that are going to go into this new release. And you actually gave a talk a couple weeks ago.
Right, right.
At Boston RB,
mm-hmm.
which is our awesome local Boston Ruby group.
Yep.
And so one thing, we'll definitely link to that mm-hmm. talk, your slides. And actually, there's a video too, right?
Yep, a video.
We can link to that video in the show notes, which we will tell you how to get to at the end of the podcast. But let's talk about some of these features.
Okay.
So the first thing, and sort of the big one, I think, is strong parameters.
Yes.
So if someone has no idea what that means, can you just sort of give a quick overview?
Okay. So strong parameters is actually going to be the default way of sanitize your parameters in Rails 4. So instead of using attribute accessible in the model, you would instead write in which parameters you're going to use. Are you going to allow into the model
mm-hmm.
Right at the controller level.
Okay.
So it is a replacement for attribute accessible.
Okay.
In Rails 4.
So attribute accessible goes away entirely.
Yeah, it's going to be extracted as a gem first, so you still can use attribute accessible.
Yeah.
But I would discourage you to use it because you don't need that anymore.
Okay. Is that the main difference that you specified in the controller instead of the model, or are there other differences as well?
Yeah, that's basically pretty much it. That's the difference. So
okay.
I actually like the way that it's going to be that this way, though, because that actually means you specify which like parameters you want to go into a particular controller
mm-hmm.
instead of like say specify it at the model level. So like for example, if you have like an admin controller, which you might want to allow them to edit everything. And like users on controller, where you might want them to edit just email, password, then name. That's like way easier to implement with strong parameters compared to like using attribute accessible.
It seems more granular.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just decide once for a model what's able to come in.
Mm-hmm.
It's per controller. That, I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main change there. Nothing else substantial for strong parameters?
Not really. Yeah, that's actually the main change.
Okay.
So I mean, I would encourage people to start using it right now, actually, because okay. it's already support with Rails 3.2.8.
So. Okay, so you can go ahead and switch to this before mm-hmm. the upgrade.
Yep.
Which will probably make your upgrade go a little more smoothly later.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we definitely learned about doing sort of hairy Rails 3 upgrades
mm-hmm.
was if you can do parts of it ahead of time.
Yep.
It's going to make your life easier later
because mm-hmm.
you're just trying to do less at once. Cool. So next feature, Rails queue.
Yes.
So what is the Rails queue at a high level?
So yeah, so Rails queue is going to be the standard API for the queuing system in Rails.
Mm-hmm.
So on the back end, whether you're using Ruby queue, using Redis, delay job, or anything, starting from Rails 4, regardless of what the back end you're using,
mm-hmm.
you can use this Rails queue API to push the job into the queue and then pop the job out and then work on it.
So it's a unified API regardless of what your queue backend looks like.
Yep.
Okay. And that's nice because then you sort of abstracted away the details of which queue implementation you're using.
Right.
So you can swap them out later if you need to.
Right. So, I mean, for example, you might want to use a Ruby queue, which ships with like Ruby 1.9 in your test and your development environment. But then you might want to switch to Redis when you're on production.
Like rescue?
Rescue.
Gotcha. Mm. Or like delay jobs or something.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay. That does sound nice, actually.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. That's actually something that I find myself doing pretty frequently anyway, is writing a sort of wrapper around external things that I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than have like a bunch of calls to specifically delayed job within my business logic, I like to have like an intermediate layer, which is like a queuing thing.
Right.
It's just some simple delegation, really, but it just keeps those details from kind of leaking out.
Yep.
And it sort of insulates you from change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the interface that they're introducing, actually, it is actually easy to like build upon as well. So if you want to have like a new queuing system, you can build it on top of this. And it's going to be easy. It is actually like active model if you want to have an object that acts like an active record, but without the backend, you would make it an active model compatible.
Mm-hmm.
But same thing. So here, for queuing, you would make it as a Rails queue compatible.
Gotcha. And so it just has to respond to certain method calls,
and
you can sort of like probably register, I guess, your whatever queuing thing is somewhere, and it can an initializer somewhere, and then you're good to go.
Yep.
Cool. And that will really be handy for development stuff, like, because in development, you probably want queues to just process immediately.
Right.
Probably even in the same thread.
Right.
In test even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by default, Rails 4 is going to ship with the asynchronous queue and synchronous queue. Both of them are triggers. Both of them are using Ruby queue, and the synchronous one will just process the job right away.
Yep. Why would you want to use a synchronous queue?
When you're in the test.
Oh, in test. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Mm.
Gotcha, cool.
And then the asynchronous one will open up a thread and then execute your job concurrently.
Got it. Makes sense. Next is cache digests.
Yes.
So this relates to the somewhat infamous Russian doll caching feature that people have been talking about. Yes. So what are cache digests?
So let's back up a bit, talking about caching. So I think I heard someone saying like one of the hardest programming or like computer science problem is actually cache expiration.
Mm-hmm.
And this cache digest feature actually going to try to solve that problem for you.
Okay.
So if you don't know about the Russian doll caching. So have you heard about the Russian doll? Like a doll within a doll within a doll?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So basically it's almost the same thing. It is the a shell template within a parent template within another parent template.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've got a web page and you have like a layout that has all the external Chrome.
Yep.
And then maybe like a login box or like some sort of content, and then within that there's nested content within there.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that each level has its own cache digest on it.
Yeah. So basically you would cache each portion of the page, and the way you had to do it before, so let's say if you change something for the children, you have to expire the parents' cache.
Okay.
Because the whole page needs to be like re-rendered.
Okay.
So cache digest actually knows how to handle that hierarchy for you. So instead of you having to like forcing the template to update by yourself, cache digest will handle that by it will know the dependency and change the timestamp and make the cache expire.
Okay, so you're going to have to tell the cache digest system somehow what the relationship is between the objects, right?
Actually, no. It's actually smarter than that. But it would detect your will looking at like how you call the cache methods.
Okay.
So like, let's say if you have a topic partial that has a post partial in there, both of them would just call a cache method, and cache digest would detect the hierarchy by itself. When you change something in the post partial, it would expire the topic partial automatically.
As well?
As well.
I thought you didn't want to expire all the parents. You just wanted to expire the children.
No, you have to expire parents.
Okay. So before you had to handle that by hand. Now mm-hmm. it notices that this one partial is nested in the other
mm-hmm.
and knows that if the child changes, the parent has to change as well.
Yep. Yep.
Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this basically makes cache expiration more straightforward because it looks at your templates.
Right.
And sort of parses out what's going on
mm-hmm.
and then figures out how to expire things.
Yep.
Okay. It seems like this is so it's interesting how many features we have that are pulled from Basecamp Next.
Right. This is actually the way that they could make the Basecamp Next so fast.
Mm. Mm-hmm. As they made a heavy use of caching.
Yeah, a lot of caching. And I think if I recall correctly, they have like 864 gigabytes of RAM for their Memcache server.
Right. So this came out of a pain they had with figuring out how to expire caches, mm-hmm. I guess. And this just makes it easier to figure out which caches to bust.
Right.
Got it. Okay. So is this going to be on by default?
It is going to be on by default. And it is actually usable with Rails 3.2.8 as well.
Okay.
So if you are using caching in Rails 3.2.8, then you should give this a try.
Okay. Next, there are some changes to relation, right?
Yep.
That's some pretty heavy changes, if I remember correctly.
Right. There's a lot of changes to the relation.
Okay. And this is like the base relationship between two active record objects, right?
Nope. This is the active record relation. It is the scope method.
Okay.
So like name scope, like all that stuff.
Okay.
But, yeah, so
this is what gets returned if you call something like user.all.
Yeah.
That returns a relation.
Yeah, that's actually that's one of the change. So it used to return the array, but now it would return the relation object.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yep.
So if you do like it used to be that if you wanted actually the array of users, you could say
mm-hmm.
user to all.
Yeah.
So what would you need to do now to actually fire the relation? Because they're sort of lazily evaluated, right?
Yeah. So you have to do relation.2a.
Okay.
2_a.
Gotcha. So I could say user.all.2a,
mm-hmm.
and that would cause it to go retrieve the users and actually...
Yeah. Or you could just call user.2a. Mind-blowing.
User.2a works?
Yes.
You can call now user.2a straight mm-hmm. up on the class, and that will go fall through to the relation?
Yep. That actually seems weird, but it
does.
Works.
Yeah, it's like, give me an array representation of user.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Are there any other methods that got moved right on there onto the base class like that?
Not really, but there's actually a relation.none.
Okay.
So, followed by the now object pattern, this new relation.none will return nothing.
Okay. Does it return an empty relation?
It is returning an empty relation. The good thing for using the relation.none instead of returning the empty array is that you still can chain another relation method.
Gotcha.
So a method could return relation.none, and then in the controller, you might still call like paginate.
Uh-huh. Right. So it prevents it. It's a null relation, basically, right?
Yep.
So it lets you get rid of checks for nullness,
mm-hmm.
right? So if at some point of the in the chain of relations,
mm-hmm.
you end up returning nothing, rather than returning an empty array, you can return this none relation.
Right.
And it will respond to the methods that a relation responds to, but
mm-hmm.
just with, like, emptiness, effectively.
Yep.
Gotcha. So if you call 2a on that, it's going to give you an empty array,
mm-hmm.
or you could call other methods on it, but it won't blow up.
Right.
That's great. That's awesome. I like to see that coming into Rails.
Yeah, that's actually like following the tail.x.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
It lets you follow tail.x because you can just keep on firing messages at it.
Mm-hmm.
In the talks that I've been giving recently talking about refactoring, I say that sort of awareness of the null object pattern has been one of the biggest improvements, I think, in my code recently.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing, and when you realize that it's a good opportunity to use it, it's just, it's tremendously powerful.
Yeah.
Gets rid of so many conditionals. Mm-hmm. So awesome. Glad to see that coming.
The other thing is that now relation would support the bang method. Like there are a lot of methods such as like where bang, from bang, unique bang. So in Rails 3, if you're using the relation, it will create a new object every time you call it.
Okay.
So this bang method would instead mutate the relation.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So instead of having to do like users equals users dot where blah blah blah, you would do users dot where bang blah blah blah, and then it will mutate.
I see
that.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than returning a brand new relation, you're going to mutate the existing one.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, that sounds reasonably handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's handy sometime when, let's say, like in the controller, you want to fire like you want to call a scope when there's parameter X's. Like, let's say, like, category ID, then you could do, like, if category's ID is not new, then fire this.
Oh, okay. Update the current relation you're working with.
Yep.
Yep. Gotcha. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Cool. Anything else changing on relation?
Yeah. The last thing, actually, this is going to make our life easier. So now relation.first and relation.last will return the record based on the ID.
Okay. Don't they already do that?
Nope. Yeah, this is like the programmer's gotcha right here.
Okay.
So it used to be that if you do user.first, it will return the first record, but the first record that returns from the database might not be the ID equals one.
Mm.
So now that would go away.
But wouldn't it be always it would be the lowest number ID, right?
Nope.
Okay. So if I, let's say I have two users.
Mm-hmm.
So I have user ID 1, user ID 2.
Mm-hmm.
If I say user.first, it returns the one with ID 1.
That is actually not always in Rails 3.
Okay. When would it, what would cause it to be different?
I haven't looked into it much, but it occurs to me whenever using like MySQL. I think if you don't specify the order, the database might return the rows out of order.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's a chance that saying user.first can be different across different databases?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that's
I had
like
no idea.
That's like a pitfall. Like you would think that when you call like user.first, you would always get the first user in the database.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Really? Weird. Yeah. But now you do.
Now you do. Yes.
Okay.
Now
in Rails. I don't think I've ever been bitten by that. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. So some databases don't necessarily use like lowest ID to mean first user,
mm-hmm.
or yep. highest to mean last.
Yeah, yeah. So now when you call first, or when you call last, it's going to add the order clause to the SQL, and now you get the right user you want.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Good. I think I'm starting to understand. So if you said user at first, does it select all the users? It doesn't return all the users.
No,
what's the SQL generated when you ask for the first user?
Select star from users order by ID limit 1.
Okay, that's what happens now.
Yep.
And then what happens with the new code?
Oh, wait. That was the new code.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's the old SQL?
Okay, it was select star from users limit 1.
Okay, interesting. So it didn't specify an order.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd probably get it in ID order, but maybe in primary key order, but maybe not.
Maybe not, yes.
Gotcha, okay. Cool. Well, that seems like a reasonable thing to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Anything else?
Nope, that's the last thing.
That's it for relation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about notable deprecations? Anything big going away?
Well, the biggest thing that going away is active resource.
Mm.
Yeah, say goodbye to that big guy. Active resource is not really well maintained by the Rails community.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of shipping that and then have the same release cycle as Ruby on Rails, they think that it would be better to extract as a gem.
Okay.
So Now, starting from Rails 4, if you want to use Active Resource, you still can add that gem to your project. Mm-hmm. It's just another line in your gem file and run bundle install.
But it's not part of the Rails package anymore.
Yeah, it's not part of it anymore.
Okay.
And it will not have the same release cycle.
Okay.
So that could mean that would mean good things though. It probably means that if there is a problem within an active resource, it may get released faster than Rails.
Right. Makes sense. Has there been any moves to find different contributors for that or anything? Or different maintainers, or is it just moving out of Rails proper?
It just moved out Rails proper. Okay. I mean, actually, I was the one who removed it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was the one who submitted the pull request. But
you're so crazy.
Yeah. Then my name is actually one of the maintainers.
Ah.
I still get the emails every night coming for like pull requests, new issues on Active Resource.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So you're actually, I was looking, you're number 31 on the contributors list these days.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, man. So you hang out in the contributors campfire room?
Yes.
Is that a public thing or is that private for, what's the deal there?
It is.
Is it top secret? Can we talk about it?
Yeah, we can actually. It is I think it's a private room. It is an invitation only. So like if you actually contribute for quite a while and you might get like a public invite from the Rails core team.
Mm-hmm.
So usually we just come in here and like discuss about the features and other stuff.
Interesting.
But, yeah, the core team actually has another Rails core campfire room that I would love to get into, but not my time yet.
Okay, I'm working on it.
Yep.
I mean, if you crack the top 20, who knows?
Ooh, yeah.
It'd be hard to say no to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens in this secret chat room with the contributors? Just discussion of features, things like that?
Yeah, discussion of features. It is the best way to get attention from the Rails core team. You could ping the chat and get the response, like, sometime right away, but sometime, like, in an hour after. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and most of the core team are hanging out in there.
Cool.
So
interesting. So... do you merge stuff into Rails? Like, do you review pulls and things like that, or issues?
Yeah, I do. I do review pull requests, but then I don't have a permission to like merge stuff in yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what can people do to make your life easier? Like when you're reading issues and pull requests, things like that. Do you see common problems?
Yeah, the common problem I found is that people creating an issue which actually a feature request. If you are creating the issue with the feature request, that's actually gonna get closed right away, and then you should be create those feature requests in the Rails core mailing list instead.
Okay.
We try to separate the issue and feature request apart because the number of issues on the GitHub is actually a lot. That's one other thing. The other thing is that when you're creating an issue, if you can't reproduce it in like a new Rails app, just create a new Rails app with the reproducible state and push to GitHub and let us like play with it.
Yeah,
that's actually the easiest way we can like figure out what's going on with the bug that you found.
Give like a minimal case that just shows off the bug.
Yep.
Totally. That's good bug reporting etiquette anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty
standard. And like if you come into like Rails issue and you say like, oh my god, my apps break, we wouldn't be able to like fix anything. Like I would still have to go back to you like, can you give me a failing test case? That's take time.
Sure, of course. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest thing, is give minimal examples that show exactly what's wrong.
Yep.
What's a good way for someone to get their first commit into Rails? I imagine a lot of people look at it and they're sort of intimidated by it. Like, it's how do you find something to fix, or how do you know what to contribute?
See, the funniest thing was that my first commit was actually coming from something that I found in Rails that I was so annoyed by it. Mm-hmm. Like, and then I realized that, yeah, I want to fix this thing. So you
scratched your own itch. You found something that was bothering you.
Yeah, yeah.
And went after it. So was it a bug, or was it just sort of a changing the way things work?
I think it was a bug. Okay. It was a bug in like inflector. Irregular inflector.
Okay.
Thing. So, I mean, yeah, that I think it caused causes the problem in my application. So I was like, yeah, I want to fix it.
But, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. One thing that I sometimes will tell people is that documentation patches are a really good way to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Fixing like little typos in the Rails guides or writing a new one if you mm-hmm. think or just reworking it. Like I think that's a really good way to get your feet wet.
Yeah. See, the thing is, if someone wants to get into the documentation, it is actually easier mm-hmm. than doing the normal patch because you can actually request a push permission to LIFO docrails, which is actually the place where all the documentation patch should go.
That's actually everyone can push to that right now. So it's LIFO and the repository is the username / mm-hmm. docrails.
Yes.
And that's basically a clone or a fork of Rails itself.
Yeah, it is a fork of Rails and it is
it's merged sort of back and forth with mm-hmm. Rails, right? They merge from there into Rails and Rails back into there.
Yep.
So if you make all documentation changes can mm-hmm. happen there.
Yeah.
And you don't need to get them, like they get reviewed by, I think, Xavier when he merges back into Rails, but you don't have to like get permission ahead of time. You can mm-hmm. just push up some commits and they're there.
Just push it up and then like, if they found out that it's not good, they're going to reword it anyways.
So. Right. Okay. Yeah. That's where I got my start on Rails commits. Mm-hmm. I think I have a lot of doc Rails.
I mean, if you go to like, Ruby on Rails guide nowadays, you would still see like there are a lot of places with like a yellow banner telling like this is a work in progress.
Uh huh.
Yeah. We definitely need a lot of hands to help on that stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah. To make it done.
Sure. So mm-hmm. those Rails guides actually live in the Rails repo. So mm-hmm. feel free to dive. So look at the Rails guides. If you see ones that need improving, just dive in there. Mm-hmm. That's a perfect way to get started.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even if you are a beginner or like just start using Ruby on Rails, it is actually going to help another beginners if you start working on the guide, because there might be some part that like we who like use Rails for like 4 years might miss it or like not really know what to put it on the Rails guide.
Totally.
Yeah.
I've heard someone say, and I think it's true, that beginners are actually in the best best place to improve documentation
mm-hmm.
because they're new to the project.
Right.
You can see what's deficient.
Mm-hmm.
So if you struggle with understanding something, you're notice what you don't understand, and then when you learn it, go back and improve it.
Yep.
Give back a little bit, you selfish jerks. So, Prem, how would people get in touch with you if they wanted to ask you some questions or follow up on the podcast?
So they can obviously follow me on Twitter. Uh-huh. I'm Sikashu on Twitter.
How do you spell that?
Sikachu.
Okay.
So it's actually like from Pikachu. Uh-huh. Just replace
with an
P
S.
With S. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. I think that actually wraps things up. Mm-hmm. But thank you very much for coming by and chatting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to do it. A couple things I want to mention before we go. The Rails Rumble is coming up very soon. Registration is October 1st. Through October 7th, with a competition of the weekend of October 13th and 14th. Just in case you don't know, the Rails Rumble is a competition where you'll have a team of up to 4 people, and you have 48 hours to build a Rails app, or any Rack-based app, really. I did the Rails Rumble back in 2009, and it was an awesome experience. I loved doing it. Made a ton of like really good Ruby friends that I still hang out with today. Like it actually like really affected my career very positively.
Yeah.
So I totally recommend, if you're even thinking about it at all, get some friends together, make a fun weekend of it, do some late night coding, and enjoy the heck out of it. Cause it's, I just do it. It's great.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure like a lot of Bobot folks going to join it as well. So
yeah, if you're in Boston, you want to come by the office. I'm sure it'll be open for people.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise look around your area. Even if your company's not doing it, chances are there'll be someplace that's doing it and open. So you can just find some other people to hang out with and hack with.
Mm-hmm.
But fully recommend it. So if you're interested, railsrumble.com. And like I said, registration is October 1st through 7th. So get your registration in there. Also, a couple events I want to mention before we go. I'm going to be giving a talk called Refactoring from Good to Great. First time, it will be at Aloha Ruby, October 8th through 10th, and then later at RubyConf, November 1st through 3rd in Denver. If you're going to be at either of those places, reach out and say hi. Mike Burns is going to be giving a talk called The Expression Problem, October 30th at the Riga Ruby Group in Latvia. Mike is also giving a talk called Scala on Android, October 9th at the Stockholm Google Technology User Group. Both Mike and I are all over the place.
Yeah, you are like international speaker.
Just doing it for the travel.
Yeah. Are you going to promise that you're going to like wear like do a aloha dance when you're giving a talk at Hawaii?
Yes, I am going to promise that. That's a great idea. This has been episode 14 of the Giant Robots Smashing Into Other Giant Robots podcast. You can get all the notes and links to things that we talked about in this episode online at thoughtbot.com/podcast/14. Today's podcast was recorded by Shauna Quintal, edited by the one and only Edward Laval, and produced by Chad Pytel. Thanks for listening.